I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Susie Larson Live.
It's only just a matter of.
Hey, everyone, and welcome into Susie Larson Live. I'm Than Bennett, sitting in for Susie today. I'm so glad you are joining us today. We have a guest today, and I'm just going to set it up this way. Wait, we have a guest today that has an epic story. I think to say anything less would be underselling the story that our guest has. So you're going to want to tune in for the entire hour to hear this directly from him. But this is a story that epitomizes the goals that Susie has for this broadcast and all of us who listen to it each and every day. And that is that we would have conversations every single day that inspire us in our faith walk, that deepen our understanding of God's word, and that heighten our awareness of his very real presence in our life. And I want to kind of tell you right out of the gate here, just set the stage this way. In recent years, our family, my wife Brooke and I and our three kids, we have been trying to grow in the grace that is really intentionally looking for ways to very practically live a life that reflects the clear commands of the scriptures. And I'm gonna be vulnerable with you right off the top here. As we've done that, it's been sobering to realize how many of those very clear commands, the non-optional commands of scripture, that we were either outright ignoring, or maybe we were rejecting because they were either difficult or they were uncomfortable, or maybe they were even out of step with the culture or our community or the people around us. And so as we try to grow in that grace, I've been looking to have conversations both publicly and privately with people who can help stretch us in those challenging areas. And today's guest is exactly that kind of person. And as we visit with him, I'm going to be taking notes for my own family, so that we can grow in the very clear biblical command that we're going to be talking about. That guest, his name is Jesse Weiss, and he is currently the Vice President for Program Design and Evaluation over at Prison Fellowship. But folks, wait until you hear his full story. It includes 7.5 years in prison. It also includes an absolute mountain of evidence of God's work in and through his life. This is a story of redemption. It's a story of perseverance. It's one of tenacity. And I really believe that it's going to inspire all of us to think about ways that we can stand in the gap that maybe we've been afraid to do it before. And so, you know, I've actually had a chance. We were talking about this before we came on the air. I've had a chance to directly interact with some of Jesse's professional work. It's excellent. And we'll tell you about that a little bit later on. But I think that Jesse's story from start to finish, from the highs and the lows, the mountains and the valleys, I think the work that he's doing today out of that experience can really be a guide for all of us. And I think it can be a guide that breaks us out of molds and causes us to earnestly follow these mandates of the gospel, including the mandate to visit the prisoner, the mandate to restore and rehabilitate those who are returning to society from a period of incarceration. We're going to have a conversation around the tough parts of this too. There's victim and there's perpetrator in some of these cases. How do we handle the tension of that balance? And so I'm just so excited to introduce you to Jesse in just a moment here. But first, a quick announcement for you. Pastors have a really hard job, folks. And October is Pastor Appreciation Month. This is something that our family tries to remember every year, and you would be surprised, I think, how far a small gesture of appreciation for our pastor goes. Our pastors pour so much into us, so let's make sure that we acknowledge them this month. We here at Faith Radio, we want to make it really easy for you, so here's what we're going to do. We will actually send a note of encouragement along with a coffee gift card to your pastor, absolutely free to you. All you've got to do is go to myfaithradio.com to sign up, put in your information, your pastor's information, and we will help you honor your pastor. So go to myfaithradio.com, sign up for Pastor Appreciation Month, and we'll send a note of encouragement and a coffee gift card to your pastor. Okay, let me tell you about our guest, and then we will get him on the air. This is going to be a great conversation. My guest is Jesse Weiss. Jesse serves as the Vice President of Program Design and Evaluation for Prison Fellowship. He manages the expansion of Prison Fellowship's Good Citizenship Model. I'm going to ask him about that a little bit later on. It's an innovative approach to measuring success in the prison system. Previously, as we talked about, Jesse served 7.5 years in prison for robbery, and then later he earned his law degree. He's a Prison Fellowship Academy graduate. He advocates for justice solutions that prioritize human dignity, accountability, and second chances. In 2006, he joined Prison Fellowship as a reentry specialist, and after law school, he returned to Prison Fellowship as a policy analyst. Listen to this. He's testified before Congress and state legislatures and helped shape criminal justice dialogue through coverage in The Wall Street Journal, Fox News, National Journal, CBN, and more. Jesse's a native of Oklahoma. He graduated magna cum laude from Regent University School of Law, and he earned his bachelor's degree from Moody Bible Institute. He's a licensed Virginia attorney, and he resides in Chesapeake, Virginia, with his wife, Melissa, and their two children. Jesse, thank you for being here today, and welcome to Suzy Larson Live.
Thank you, Than. It's great to be with you.
Jesse, I'm really grateful you're here. And we talked about this before we came on, but we're going to spend a good chunk of time in your story. And then we're going to spend a good chunk of time talking about your current work at Prison Fellowship, and especially ways that all of us can practically get involved with your work and then also just with this work generally in our everyday lives. But first off, we start every day here at Suzy Larson Live by making it personal and talking about what God has been saying to us, both through his word and also through his people. And so let's start there. What has God been saying to Jesse Weiss lately? What are you hearing from him these days?
Well, thanks, Than. I love that question. And I think for me, you know, I'm the type of person that I'm always looking to fill my time. And I look at my schedule and my three calendars that I'm tracking and trying to make sure that, you know, I'm always moving and always being productive. But really what I feel the Lord telling me as of late is just to learn to be content. And in that pursuit of contentment, to just seek his presence and find his presence. There are so many, you know, there's so many opportunities that we have that are before us, but really just taking the time and determining what is the thing, the one thing that the Lord has for me today, and where do I need to be focused? And so, you know, I've been just finishing a book by Justin Early called The Common Rule, which I highly recommend. But it's really just a focusing of what is important, and allowing the Lord to really speak to us in determining that. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
I love that so much, Jesse. You know, we know that we're supposed to be still and know that he is God, but that can be so hard. I was actually having a conversation on air yesterday with Pastor Alan Wright, and we talked about this. We talked about how it can be so tempting to strive, so tempting to make progress on our own strength. So I love that God is calling you to rest in him and in his power. Look, we're gonna spend quite a bit of time in your story here. And I wanna say to everyone first at the outset, we're spending time on Jesse's story, not to dwell on it. We're doing it in order to lay a foundation for the gospel work that all of us are called to. And so I just want to make sure as we begin this, that we do it from a posture that recognizes that this is the backdrop of redemption. This is what Jesse's reality of needing a savior looked like. But we all have our own version, right? I have my own version of needing a savior. You have your own version. You have your own reason for needing redemption. But we're going to spend time in this story in order to sort of effectively absorb the mission that he's going to impart to us in the second half of the show. So let's keep that right at the forefront of our mind as we dig in here. Jesse's past does not define him. My past does not define me, and yours doesn't define you. So with that said, Jesse, let's start all the way back with your formative years. I want to know what your childhood years were like. And this is before we get to what happened when you were 21. We're going to get to that probably after the break here. But just as we head into this break, talk to us about what your early years was like. What was your experience like growing up?
Yeah, you know, Than, I like to say that I grew up in Christian suburbia. And so I grew up middle class, and parents were married. My parents ended up getting divorced about 21 years after marriage, but during my formative years, my parents were together. I grew up in a Christian household. I attended the private Christian schools, was the fastest at sword drills, memorized the most verses. It was by all accounts, just kind of the typical good kid. My teachers loved me. I, did well in sports. I mean, if you were just looking outside and looking in, you know, you would say this kid, is just a good American kid. I mean, it was a slice of Americana and, you know, I was kind of right in the middle of that. And so my story, you know, kind of starts, I think, is, you know, possibly as a lot of your listeners here, in that regard, in the sense of there's a strong faith component growing up. And so when I was very young, I was very sensitive to the Lord, and really had a heart for pursuing him. It wasn't until I was about around 15, 16 years old that I really started beginning to challenge the realities that I saw, at least in Christendom. And so beginning to see some of the hypocrisies and, you know, beginning to challenge some of the tenets and really wrestling with, you know, is the God of my parents really, you know, the God that I want to serve or should serve or those types of things. And so it wasn't so much that I began to challenge, I think, you know, who God was, but I really began to challenge who my parents said that God was, which I find, I think, is fairly typical, being of that age and just trying to push against boundaries. But for me, I think, you know, I really began to challenge that and it really began to take a root, in me. So by the time I was 18, I really, you know, had no desire to kind of be, you know, fall into that kind of category. And a lot of that had to do with my parents were pretty fundamental and very strict. And so trying to push against those boundaries and not wanting to serve a God who just said no all the time really kind of started to, you know, started me on a path towards, you know, where I am today, ultimately.
Yeah, that lays a good foundation, Jesse. And when we get back from this break, we've got to pause here, but when we get back, we're going to fast forward to when you were age 21 and things did transition to a point where ran into quite a bit of trouble. So we're going to talk about that after the break. We're talking to Jesse Weiss, Vice President of Program Design and Development and Evaluation for Prison Fellowship. I'm Than Bennett, sitting in for Suzy Larson Live, back with more with Jesse Weiss after this.
Faith Radio podcasts are produced by the listener-supported ministry of Faith Radio. If you're interested in becoming a team member, a donor to this ministry, you can support the podcast anytime and donate at myfaithradio.com. Good God Almighty, I hope you'll find me
praising your name no matter what comes. Welcome back to Suzy Larson Live. This is Than Bennett. My guest today is Jesse Weiss. He's the Vice President of Program Design and Evaluation for Prison Fellowship. And before the break, Jesse was laying the foundation of his early childhood years. He painted really a pretty rosy picture of his early years. He talked about growing up in Christian suburbia, talked about doing sword drills with the Bible. I remember those too, Jesse. I was pretty good at those too. I don't know about now, but maybe we could have a challenge later. But I do remember those. However, I want to get right back into your story, and I want to fast forward to age 21 when things took a pretty dark turn. And I'm going to leave it to you, Jesse, how much of the detail you want to share here. But at 21, you were convicted of attempted bank robbery. Tell us what you think we should know about that time, that event in your life, and then also about being convicted. Paint the picture for us of what happened.
Yeah, I you know, by the time I turned 18, I really describe myself as someone who was just lost in the sense of trying to find meaning and purpose. And so you know, this is much clearer, you know, if you kind of peel back, you know, the panels on your life and you get a chance to look back, everything seems so much clearer. You know, as they say, hindsight's always 20/20. So a lot of this I've had the opportunity to reflect on, you know, and just get some clarity on. But by the time I was 18, I was really struggling with trying to find meaning and purpose. And so I was wrestling with, you know, what is the purpose of living and life? And a lot of the existential questions that a lot of 18 to 25-year-olds wrestle with, you know, for me, I took them really, really deeply and very personally, and they manifested themselves in outward ways. And so I became, you know, very depressed. I enrolled in college because, you know, I thought, well, you know, I'm just going to be a doctor. That's what you do in America. You go to college and you be a doctor. But I really had no motivation to do that. So I failed out of college just because I wouldn't go to class. Really just found myself flailing in life. Nothing anchoring me or holding me or propelling me forward. And so just kind of floating around and existing. And so things were kind of just happening to me. I was not a force happening to anything. And I just found myself kind of meandering and finally got enough, you know, kind of unction to join the military. So I joined the military when I was 19, the Oklahoma National Guard, and kind of came out of that experience with a rejuvenated sense of the American dream. So walked out of that and said, yeah, I know I'm going to go back to college and I am going to go to med school and this is what I'm going to do. But even that, looking back, was very empty in the sense of there was no reason other than this is just what I thought you were supposed to do. And so, again, there was no passion or purpose behind my actions. But by the time I was 21, I hit a wall in the sense of I realized that, you know, life was not for me if this is the way that it was to be lived. Hmm. And again, I came to this conclusion, having experienced all those other things that I previously mentioned, you know, the sword drills and the all of those types of things. But for me, I really, at this point in my life, I would classify that I really just became a hedonist in the sense of whatever was going to give me pleasure was what I was going to pursue. And for me, it came down to this very pragmatic, you know, decision, which was in order for you to be a true hedonist, you have to have money to do that. So I'm a 20-year-old, you know, individual without a job. And so, you know, how do you do that? And so I became, you know, I didn't know where to take that from there. But ultimately I became suicidal. I purchased a .38 revolver with the intent of killing myself with it. I remember looking myself in the mirror and I remember the only thing that stopped me from pulling the trigger was that my dad had a white leather couch. Now, why my dad had a white leather couch, I don't know. This was the 90s, but you know, I remember, you know, just not pulling the trigger because I didn't want to get blood on my dad's couch. And looking back, I mean, it's just God's grace that preserved me right there. But it was right there that another decision was made because I determined that I couldn't quite live, you know, I couldn't pull the trigger. So I had to live in this existence that I was just going to live for me. And so I took that same 38. I was in Oklahoma at the time. I stole a vehicle. I drove it all the way up to Iowa with the intent to rob a bank. I knew that I had some grandparents in Iowa, spent a lot of time in Iowa growing up, visiting my grandparents. I knew that it was a rural community. And so just was looking, I thought it'd be easy to rob a bank in the middle of a farm town in Iowa. So I stole this vehicle. I drove it all the way to Iowa. I cased out a bank. I waited for the bank president at the time to unlock the bank, followed him in with a loaded weapon, told him to empty the vault. I duct taped him up and I drove away from the bank. And so that was what, you know, there was a lot of thought in that, but that all happened in the span of a week. And so, you know, from, you know, day one, I was, you know, suicidal to day seven, I was arrested. And so I was involved in a high-speed car chase the bank president convinced me to walk out the front door. I had walked in with him through a side door, and walking out the front door initiated the explosion of dye packs, which for your listeners are essentially packs within, hidden within bills, within money, that explode with dye and with tear gas. And so I was in the vehicle, I was driving away, and all of a sudden I look in the back seat where I had put the bag, and red dye is blowing out, and I can smell tear gas, and I knew what tear gas smelled like because I'd been in the military. So I'm rolling down my windows trying to be inconspicuous, and red dye is blowing out my car, and, and I'm snotting and sneezing and coughing all over the place. And so, you know, it's a bit comical, but at the same time, a very serious situation. But I got involved in a high-speed car chase. Eventually I was, the police vehicle struck my vehicle. And I can remember looking up, and it seemed within a matter of seconds, there was black Suburbans and shotguns and megaphones and all of this noise. But I can remember just sitting there, and it seeming so quiet, but it was so noisy on the outside. But I can remember just sitting there and looking up. I remember looking up. I remember this one police officer just pointed at me, and he gave me the come here sign. And I just got out of my car. And to this day, I'm surprised I wasn't shot. But I got out of my car, and they put me in handcuffs and put me in the front seat of a police car. And I remember driving back by the bank. The police officer was doing his due diligence, and I know a lot more about this now than I did at the time, but he asked me, you know, does this scene look familiar to you? And I remember saying, yeah, it does look familiar to me. And I said, do you think I'll go to prison for that? And he says, yeah, most certainly. And I said, well, how much time do you think I'll do in prison? And he said, oh, I don't know, 5 years or so, maybe. And I said, well, I've never been to prison before. And that was literally my attitude walking into this kind of next phase, which was my introduction into the criminal justice system.
Jesse, we've got to pause here. I got to tell you, I've been holding my breath as you told parts of that story. Well, unbelievable. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to ask you about your experience of checking into prison. You wrote that your first experience about prison was really just learning how to best give away your human dignity. And you also said that you were in prison internally a long time before you actually went to prison. So we'll talk about that after the break. But folks, as we go to a break, Jesse talked about some hard things, some very hard things. He talked about being suicidal and not having a value for his own life. Folks, if you have ever had thoughts along those lines, I want to remind you of a few things. I want to give you an action point as well. You are fearfully and wonderfully made. The creator of the universe found fit to create you for this moment in time. You have value and you have infinite worth, and you should always remember that. And if you need to talk to someone about thoughts that you may be having, I want you to call the suicide hotline, 988. It's just someone on the other end to hear your concerns, to hear your problems, and talk through those with you. Again, it's 988, and we will be back after this with more from Jesse Weiss on Suzy Larson Live. Welcome back to Suzy Larson Live. Than Bennett sitting in for Suzy today, talking with Jesse Weiss. Before the break, Jesse was talking just an amazing story of how his life took a wrong turn. He ended up committing armed robbery of a bank. He talked about being caught for that and how he was looking a prison sentence in the face. And sure enough, Jesse, you were convicted and you were sentenced to not 5 years in prison. You were sentenced to 15 years in prison. And I want to ask you specifically about two things I read from your account of checking into prison. You said first that your first experience about prison was really just learning how best to give away your human dignity. And then you also said that you were in prison a long time before you went to prison. Listen to this, folks. Jesse says, the outward condition of prison reflected my inward prison. Jesse, I'm hoping you'll say a word about both of those things, if you would. The stripping away of your dignity, and then also the inward condition of prison that you were already in.
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, it was my first kind of contact with the criminal justice system, and really didn't know what to expect, or I didn't really have any point of reference. And so after getting out of the police car and just being booked, I remember standing in front of the deputy at the time, and the deputy asking me to remove my clothes. And so I took off my shirt, my pants, and just stood there in my underwear. And I remember him looking at me and saying, "You take your underwear off too." And I remember thinking, "What is this about?" And which had no concept of what it meant to be strip searched or anything like that, or just have any, you know, any context for that. So that was kind of the first kind of experience for me. And then just realizing, you know, over time, how you enter the system, you gradually lose more and more of who you are as a person. So you lose your name and it gets replaced with a number. You lose your, obviously you lose your freedom, which is certainly, you know, a reasonable thing given the gravity of my conduct. However, it is a constant stripping of just your humanity away for a very long period of time. And so you have to really, and what I also learned inside prison is that if you take a man's dignity, he's going to get it back some way. And so usually that comes back through violence inside prison, where people are just, in my opinion, just trying to get their dignity back. And so I think a lot of that has formed my positions on prison reform, and how particularly what I work on now related to the good citizenship model, which is essentially just creating ways and practices that people can still be people, but yet still be punished appropriately. So, and then I think, you know, and then to your point, I mean, I was in prison way before I entered those doors. I mean, I was already in pain. I was already constricted and limited. I had no perspective of my life. I had no freedom, really, even though I had freedom in the physical sense. I really had no freedom. And if you look on the outside of a prison, the aesthetic of a prison is not very welcoming. Most of them are very gray, drab. Nobody wants a prison in their backyard. It's not going to increase your property value. And for me, you know, if I looked at that, the aesthetic of a prison, I really felt like it represented my inward condition, much as very similar to the prodigal son. If you saw everybody's read the parable of the prodigal son, you know, who goes out, finds himself in a pigsty, which was really just an outward reflection of his inward condition. And the same with me, as the prison was calling out to me for a very long time.
Jesse, I want to make sure we have time to get to the application, the great work you're doing at Prison Fellowship, but the rest of your story is so compelling. You ended up spending 7.5 years in prison, I believe, and I wanted you to tell us a little bit about that, because at least from my read of your story, you really used that time, despite the challenges that you're talking about, for a lot of personal growth. You know, earning a degree from Moody Bible, attending Prison Fellowship Academy, studying for law school. And so I'm wondering, what was it during that time that motivated you to be so diligent while you were serving? And then also maybe give us a glimpse into what your relationship with the Lord was like during that time while you were behind bars.
Yeah, this is the best part of the story, Dan, right here. This is where it gets good. And so, you know, when I walked into the prison system, again, I had no purpose. I continued to the same trajectory I was on before. I just meandered around, got pushed around kind of by the prison minutiae, and just, you know, try to stay out of trouble and try to make sure I wasn't in any kind of physical, in the path of any physical violence and things of that nature. But I heard about this program. I was in a prison, and it was a new prison, but it was built on an old landfill. And so some of it was sinking. And it was known as a gladiator camp, which is essentially where they decided to send everybody who was younger than 25 in the same institution, which is not a great idea. So there's lots of fights, lots of people stealing each other's stuff, lots of cops and robbers games, things of that nature. Everything you kind of see on television about prison was happening there. And so, you know, I'm trying to get out of there. So I hear about this program run by Prison Fellowship called the Academy. And I said, "Yeah, I'm just going to sign up for it. I don't want to do it, but I want to get out of here." So I just signed my name up, and lo and behold, I I get an announcement, hey, pack your stuff, you're going to this program. And so I said, okay. So I went to this, they shipped me to this other prison where this program was happening, the academy, and it's literally the same prison design. So if you look at the outside of the prison, it looks exactly the same. You walk in, it's the same, the buildings are the same, everything, the same layout is exactly the same, it's just in a different town. So literally you could think that you didn't even move anywhere, but I'll never forget walking into this facility because I remember seeing green grass. And I remember just in the back of my mind thinking, it was so stark. That color was so stark against the backdrop of that black and white concrete existence. And I remember thinking, maybe there's something living here. Something is growing here. There's life here. And even though I couldn't articulate it at the time, looking back, that was the feeling that I had. And I'll never forget that. And I can still see it to this day, that stark green grass just kind of poking up out of that concrete. And I remember walking into this unit where this program was, and people were looking at me in the eye, shaking my hand. And I was like, what is happening here? Like, this is not normal prison culture. This is not what happens here. And so, but that really began my trajectory. And I remember just getting involved in the program, and I had a counselor whose name was Dan, who's still a dear friend of mine today. And him and I just became really good friends, but he became a mentor to me at the time. And eventually I came to the conclusion, I had to start over. I really had to start over. I was very philosophical in my approach to God at this point. And I had to start over. And eventually I came to the conclusion that there was a God and it wasn't me. And so once I came to that conclusion, then I started to ask questions like, well, what kind of God is he? What does he require? Is he aloof? Is he, these types of questions. And so it eventually, I remember my counselor of the program, Dan, I remember he would say things like, and I would watch him. He would say, when I pray, I get on my knees. And he would get on his knees and he would pray. And I'd never seen that level of commitment or authenticity or connection to a person's belief system. I'd always seen the words and the kind of the puffery and the flamboyance of Christian life, but that deep connection. And I was fascinated by that because ultimately I found truth there, which is ultimately what I was pursuing. And so that just began a trajectory. I would go to these kind of church events that they had at the prison. And I remember just sitting in the back row and I would just weep uncontrollably. And I actually went to a psychologist. I thought something was wrong with me. But looking back, I just think it was the Lord cleansing me of all the preconceived notions that I had, everything that I had built up of who he is and who he wasn't. And I was just really being reformed. And so I don't have a moment in time where I can say at this moment, I gave my life to Christ. With me, it was a wrestling match, much like Jacob. And I still wrestle today with certain things. But I think that it was, that really began my trajectory. And after that, you just couldn't stop me. I read everything and get my hands on, and I really just began to devote myself to being who I felt the Lord had called me to be.
Jesse, I'm stunned and I'm gratified that, that God, our gracious God, met you in that place and revealed himself to you in that way. And, I just think it's appropriate to pause here and to say to anyone listening, if you don't have a relationship with Jesus Christ, like one that Jesse's describing, like one that I've built my life upon, I really encourage you to consider that today. It's really as simple as acknowledging you're a sinner. You've heard Jesse talk about acknowledging the mistakes that he's made, confessing a belief in Jesus Christ, and confessing that with your mouth, saying it out loud, telling him that you accept him. And if that's something that you do today, we want to come around you here at Faith Radio. If you make that decision today, I want you to text the word faith to 41224. And again, you'll find someone on the other end of that text who will walk you through next steps. Again, it's the word faith to 41224. Jesse, we've got about 3 minutes or so before our next break. And I want to, in the next segment, I want to really focus on application, taking your story and applying it to our lives and some of the things that need to happen. So I'm wondering if you could kind of tell us about, as you got out of prison, you'd done a lot of the right things in prison, you paid your debt to society, and you thought it was time to start pursuing opportunity on the outside. You wanted to go to law school, there were hurdles there. You can tell us about that. But eventually, you did go to law school and you did a clerkship for the organization that I work for, the ACLJ. And you were in a different location than I was. You were in Virginia Beach. I was in Washington, D.C. But, you know, small world, unbelievable. But tell us about that period. Tell us about why you took the bar, not once, but twice. And tell us about why your case went to the Virginia Supreme Court. I believe it was three times, but give us kind of that story.
Yeah, so I was very fortunate during my incarceration. There are very few hands reaching up to help, you know, to help you when you're incarcerated. And I was fortunate to find several, most of them through prison fellowship. And when I walked out of prison, I walked out with the belief that I mattered, I could give back, I had potential. And so I remember studying, I graduated from Moody Bible Institute, doing correspondence the hard way, literally mailing things back and forth. It took me 6 years to do it. But I completed that and I left prison just with that belief. And so I started studying for the LSAT, the law school admission test, while I was still in my prison bunk. So I left prison thinking I'll be governor someday. And so, because I really had a belief in who I was and my potential way stronger than I did when I came into the prison system, for sure. I had never had that. And so I left and, you know, it was a hard go. But I really just, you know, I remember the first job I had getting out of prison was literally slinging horse manure and feeding a bunch of horses and cleaning out their stalls. And, you know, I was so grateful for that time and that opportunity, but I would always vision myself like being somewhere else and doing other things and wanting to go to law school. And so I just said, I'm going to apply to one law school. And if I get in, then that's where I'm supposed to be. And so I did. I applied to law school over at Regent University in Virginia Beach. And ultimately I was accepted, and I'll never forget packing everything that I owned in my little car and driving all the way to Virginia. And I was elated, to just have the opportunity to participate, and to, you know, really have a chance at a future. And so I loved law school, loved every second about it. I loved the competition. I loved everything. And so I met my wife there. We got married. And that's when that started, after I graduated law school, my pursuit to actually become a lawyer.
Unbelievable. And after the break, we're going to talk about application. The part that Jesse left out a little bit, and I want to make sure you know, he ultimately had to take the bar twice, and he had to take his case to the Virginia Supreme Court three times to get them to approve his licensure. So just unbelievable perseverance, redemption. Jesse, thank you for being so vulnerable, telling your story. After the break, I really want to get your wisdom in how the rest of us can engage this issue, to stand in the gap, and to be the gospel for those returning from incarceration. So more on Suzy Larson Live right after this with Jesse Weiss.
With all the bad news out there, it's good to remember the good news, to get some encouragement every single day. Well, if you need a word of encouragement, we would love to connect with you on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and we're even on YouTube. You know, we're creating encouraging posts every single day to help you focus on what really matters, to lift your chin, to help you remember that you belong to God and He loves you and He's committed to you. You'll find graphics, you'll find featured Bible verses, quotes from hosts and from our shows, articles about the topics you're interested in, as well as videos from all of our hosts. You can search Faith Radio on social media and find us today. We'd love to connect with you.
I will tell of your wonders, sing of your grace. The God of creation knows me by name. The Lord is faithful.
Welcome back to Suzy Larson Live. Than Bennett talking with Jesse Weiss. I love the line in that song, the God of creation knows our name. Jesse was talking about how when he went to prison, he lost his name in exchange for a number, but not with God, he didn't. The God of the universe still knew the name of Jesse Weiss, called him back to his side. He has shared with us very vulnerably his story, 7.5 years in prison, a struggle for nearly a decade on the outside to have opportunity to go to law school. Obviously, did very well, but ultimately had to take the bar twice before he could get his law license. Jesse, I want to pivot now to talking to our listeners about how we apply this to our lives. I know your current position deals a lot with policy changes, and I do want to ask you about policy in a minute, but I want to first ask you about personal application, because I think this is where it gets tricky for folks. And I would just say that personally for our family, because there's a tension here, right? Scripture talks quite a bit about consequences for wrongdoing. So certainly one side of the coin of justice involves paying a debt to society. But then followers of Jesus also have to balance that with the repeated commands in Scripture to visit the prisoner, is what it says in Matthew 25. In Hebrews 13, it talks about remembering the prisoner. And there's a whole bunch of other places where rehabilitation and restoration is a part of our call. And that's really the story of the gospel. We've all been afforded a grace that we don't deserve. And we, in turn, need to reflect that grace to others and work to restore and rehabilitate those who have paid the price. So I guess I want to ask you, how do you think that we as believers in Jesus best do that? How do we do it in a way that restores the victim, but then also stands on the side of dignity for the one who is returning to society from incarceration? I'll tell you this. I think it was your wife. I think she said that we need to see the person and not just the crime. Help us with that. How do we do that?
Yeah, I mean, that's very hard to do, especially depending on where you're sitting. If you're a victim of a crime, particularly a violent crime, it's very difficult to do that. And I'd be cautious, trying to tell that person what they should and shouldn't do. I think at the heart of this is understanding, number one, that it is a complex issue. And I think, you know, what I like to challenge people and encourage them to do is to start thinking about this and what their position is on it, because ultimately it comes down to a justice question. What do you believe justice is? And how does that, your theory of justice, ultimately work in the criminal justice context? And, you know, there's basically, you know, I'm going to simplify it a little bit, but there's basically two camps. There's one camp that says, well, if you punish a person based on what he deserves and merely as much as he deserves, it's purely revenge and it's barbarous, you know, it's immoral. Mm-hmm. And then you have another side that says, no, you've got to punish people as hard, you know, whatever they deserve, but they don't look at, well, how much is, what is, what is the just deserts, you know? What does that mean? And how many years of prison is that? Or what happens when you go to prison? And so is punishment being sent to prison and losing your freedom? Or is being in prison and being demeaned as a human being, is that part of your punishment? Being subjected to additional violence, those types of things. And so I think it's just being informed of kind of what is happening. And, you know, you can certainly get informed by visiting prisonfellowship.org and seeing the great work that our advocacy team does on these issues and how you can get involved. But I think it's just becoming familiar with the issues. You know, a lot of us think, you know, well, we punish to deter people from crime. But in reality, the only alignment true to justice, when you think about it, is retribution. A man should pay, a woman should pay what they owe. And so the question is, well, how much do they owe? And when we send a person to prison and they stay there for 10 years and then they're going to get out, what does that look like? And I can personally attest that the norms of prison culture are antithetical to the success that we want people to have when they exit prison. For example, in prison, it is not normal for you to look people in the eye, to shake their hand, to introduce yourself by your first name or your last name. You don't talk to people that you don't know. You don't associate with authority or the correctional staff. So there is a litany of norms that exist that if you live by those on the outside, there's only one place that you're going to return, and that's back into prison. And so looking at an understanding that dynamic, and then also understanding, I think, that there is you know, what do people in prison need, I think, is also something that's very important to understand. And what I mean by that is, you know, me kind of going through the prison system for almost 8 years and having believers come in and volunteer and things like that, which was phenomenal. I don't remember the number of sermons that I've heard in my life. I don't know how many sermons I've heard in my life, but I can tell you, I can count them on one hand, how many people have poured into me, how many people have believed in me and could see things in me that I couldn't see. And so that's what I remember. And that to me is the embodiment of Christ. And so where I think you make the most impact is not in simply, you know, going into a prison and preaching the gospel, because I can tell you, I think I've been saved 20 times in the sense of, you know, everybody that comes into prison kind of has the same message. But in reality, people in prison, they're there every time. Every time someone comes, they're hearing the same message over and over and over again. And ultimately, we need to have this discipleship opportunity where we're pulling people into their calling, understanding that they can have their calling while they remain incarcerated, I think is so powerful, and is something that people can do. But really just starting to wrestle with these issues, you know, don't be shy, dive in, read C.S. Lewis, who is very formative for me. His essay on the humanitarian theory of punishment is very powerful and I think very poignant for today's society. But wrestle with these issues and then understand that you yourself, you know, can have a dramatic impact on someone's life by either volunteering in prison, you know, speaking out on these issues, even just being informed on these issues and speaking out on these issues can have a great impact.
Jesse, we're going to link to Prison Fellowship in the show notes after if people want to log on, get more informed on the policy issues and also the work that Prison Fellowship does, you know, going into prison and preaching the gospel, but also working to rehabilitate. You know, my initial reaction, you know, we want our justice system to include consequences for action and to provide disincentives to crime. But, and you've written about this, I know, but if ultimately we're not aiming towards rehabilitation of people, both victims and perpetrators, then there's really no point. That has to be what we're after. Otherwise, we'll never break out. Jesse, I've only got about a minute left to get a response here from you, but is there anything practically that you could tell families, families with children? What can they do for families of those who are incarcerated? Would there be a family care that you guys recommend, or what pointers would you give to families with children?
Yeah, excellent, Than. So at Prison Fellowship, we have an Angel Tree program, which is we provide a Christmas present on behalf of the incarcerated mother or father. They get to write a note to their child, and then we engage the church to deliver those gifts on behalf of the mother or father. And so you can sign up for that. Your church can sign up for that to give a gift, you know, to a child of an incarcerated parent on behalf of their parent. And you can sign up by going to prisonfellowship.org and just searching for Angel Tree in the upper right-hand corner there. And you can easily get connected to do that. But it's a great way to get connected to the family and then allow the family to get connected to the church and then build the relationship from there.
And we'll post that in the show notes. Jesse, I really appreciate you being here today. My heart is it's just increasingly compelled these days to pay so close attention to the very clear, very practical, very tangible directives that Jesus gave for how to walk out his gospel on this earth. There are just no two ways about it. This command to visit the prisoner, to seek justice, to seek both accountability and rehabilitation, those are things that we as Jesus followers, we're supposed to be about them. And so I thank you for sharing your story. I thank you for the work you do, and I thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Than. It's been my pleasure.
Jesse Weiss, everybody. You can check out the work that Prison Fellowship does by visiting prisonfellowship.org. We will post that in the show notes as well as the podcast goes up. Friends, I'm just so grateful to be able to have these candid conversations with you. I know we had some tough material today, but I do hope you found some encouragement today. I hope you found some practical application because this is what being a Jesus follower is all about. And it's really exciting to me to walk into. This is the way that we get to help make the good news of the gospel tangible, make it real in our world and to our world. It's how people are going to come face to face with our Jesus. And so I'm hoping that all of us will take some time today to think about Jesse's words, to think about his story, and to consider how we might better engage this space. And I'm excited to see those results. I'm Than Bennett, grateful to have been with you today. Thank you to Susie. Thank you to Angela in the control room. And I hope you will join us all right back here next time on Susie Larson Live.
Thanks for listening to this conversation from Susie Larson Live. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player, and never miss a show.